everyone. Welcome to episode 72 of Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the website, your host for their weekly run through the world of mixed martial arts. And this week we have a very good show. Joining me is an old friend, old guest, Mark LaMonica from Newsday. He is obviously in the New York scene, and with UFC headed to Long Island, Strong Island, for the very first time, coming up on Saturday night with a big show on Fox. Figured it was a good time to catch up with Mark again, and because there's a lot of stuff to talk about in, I almost said the Garden State, but New York State, the Empire State, and that whole region. Let's see, the past week we've had the Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor train stop by in a very unforgettable show and event in Brooklyn. We obviously have UFC Long Island coming up on Saturday from the historic Nassau Coliseum. Historic for wrestling fans. I'm sure a lot of other people would have a lot of other choice words for it. Anyway, UFC is going there for the first time on Saturday. And then Newsday, who Mark obviously is the he's a deputy sports editor for and also is the MMA guy there, did a really great feature, set of features, all about this show, the fighters on this show, a lot of where are they now from some Long Island fighters. Really well done piece. I urge you to check those out on Newsday. You can see Mark linked them a lot, obviously, on his Twitter account. And for people that are in that area, you might have actually seen it in the actual physical paper, which does exist these days, guys. Physical paper's still around. Anyway, you can find that stuff online if you don't happen to be in that region. And we talked a lot about that. We talked about the Mayweather-McGregor experience. We talked about the Newsday and the set of features he did and some of the interesting things about that. And also UFC Long Island coming up this weekend. Chris Weidman, is this his last stand? What does he have left? Kelvin Gastelum, is he going to pull out a big victory here and keep going at 185 after this struggle fest he had making 170 pounds? And what about the rest of the card? What's the one fight that we're really both excited to see? You'll hear about that and more. So without further ado, let's get right to the interview of Mark LaMonica of Newsday. Well, what an appropriate week to bring back an old friend of the show. He is the deputy sports editor and an MMA writer for Newsday out of the New York region. He's the one and only Mark LaMonica, and Mark, we'll start you off again with the really tough questions. Will you be going to UFC this weekend or the fair across the street?
I will be in attendance at the fights on fight night.
That's what
before
I think.
That and after that, you might see me at the fair with the kids.
well, you know, it should be quite a scene before and afterward there, I would imagine. I don't know if you'll see more fights inside the arena or if you'll see more fights at the fair. Who knows?
I'm going to go inside because you got both the fighters and the fans.
Very true. Very true. Got a little mix of both. Well, this was really good. I was thinking about who we want to talk to coming up this week, obviously, with UFC heading to Long Island. And you were the perfect guy for a lot of reasons. One is there's a lot going on in your region, really has been in the past week or so. I want to start with actually, before we get to all the work you've been doing for Newsday and this really cool feature and this is project you've been working on, I want to kind of get the Mayweather-McGregor stuff out of the way because you headed to the Barclays Center in Brooklyn and last week for the one of the four stops that the Mayweather-McGregor promotional tour took. And you were among the thousands and thousands of attendants waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting some more. Just give us, the event has come and, talked to death, but what was your experience in the, I guess, from start to finish with this whole circus that came into Brooklyn?
Yeah, that whole Mayweather-McGregor thing in Brooklyn, I mean, to call it a circus, I think it's kind of insulting to the circus, you know? It was just bad. I don't know how else you say it. I mean, you expect between Mayweather and McGregor, you know it's not starting on time. I mean, you just know that's going to happen. That's just the way life is. If you've covered one of their events, you know it's not an anomaly when that happens.
Yeah.
You put them together, you get that double negative, it's not going to be a positive at all. So, all right, 90 minutes, you wait. Okay. You know, bad, but not a surprise. But you don't deliver. You didn't give him anything after that 90 minutes. You make him wait 90 minutes, and you come out, and you just curse and scream at each other. And You know, there's no quotes you could use from that thing without the asterisks or them dash or brackets or bleeps or whatever. It was, you know, forget the quality of the sound in the arena at the Barclays. That was just, I mean, that was probably the worst of the whole thing. And it wasn't even that, you know, it wasn't even the worst, but it was just, awful. You couldn't hear anything. And as the crowd screams, you couldn't understand, you could hear stuff, but you couldn't understand anything except for the B words and the F bombs.
So where where were you located in the arena?
I was on the floor just right, I guess, as they were walking, as you see them walk up that red carpet and that, that little runway, right next to them, basically. I mean, Connor walking in his outfit, and it was outlandish, and that was worth a chuckle. And then after that, it's just like, you know, I think they need better writers because they had nothing left. I mean, Toronto, hilarious. Some of the stuff that they were doing there, great to watch. But then you get to Brooklyn and you're like, let's just, okay, I think the tour's over. Yeah. You know, if they could have canceled London, they would have, I think, after that performance. What I found really interesting, though, is, you know, everyone always says that this stuff is, it's for show and it's to sell the fight. And that's exactly what it is, because you talk to them, you know, in the media room back and forth, you give them a legit question, you get a legit answer. Most cases, you know, there's not so much of the bluster and the pomp and circumstance of it all. So in that respect, okay, great. There was some interesting insights, I thought. But the show itself, like, which is what obviously all the public in the world sees and what gets clipped up and spread around in social, that was just something that, you know, I think it turned a lot of people off. I think I had people coming to me here at work saying, this McGregor Mayweather stuff's hilarious. This is great. And then the morning after Brooklyn, you know, they weren't coming around talking to me about it too much.
Yeah, I think you're right that it really only, I'm surprised in this era that they're still having, there's a four-city tour, but they do it, you know, consecutively like this. And, I mean, just that Toronto one alone, they could have just ended it, and it would have been, you know, it would have been perfect. There's your a lot of your audio. There's exactly everything you kind of wanted to get out there in the clips you want to use in promotional packages and, you know, that, you know, ESPN and all these other major outlets would pick up. And then after that, with Brooklyn, which was seen as a dud, and then with London, which became really – really kind of got notoriety for the wrong reasons with, you know, Floyd dropping the homophobic slur and the continued use of boy by McGregor and just these ugly elements that kind of brought into it. It was just, Toronto really hit this high note. And then, you know, Brooklyn was just really surprising. These guys just didn't, you mentioned the writers, they just didn't, it's tough because they really just didn't have anything else to say. You know, it's not like, like when UFC does some, you know, they do press conferences and they'll usually do, you know, one. And so occasionally they'll do some sort of tour, but they kind of know when to back off. So at some point, there's not much else to say. And after Toronto, it's going to be hard to top that.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you know, I'll give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt in this sense when he was saying, like, you know, he wasn't prepped, he wasn't told how it was going to work and stuff like that. I give him a little bit of leeway there in the fact that boxing does things completely differently than UFC and MMA does in general. Boxing, the press conferences typically are the promoter, the network guy, the fighter, maybe a trainer. They come out, they say a few things, and then they're done. There's no Q&A. All the Q&A stuff is done beforehand. So that's a little bit different than what UFC typically does. Usually if they're doing a press conference, there's questions. And you can play off of that and play off the vibe and the excitement. So I give them that, the leeway in that sense. But then once you actually start talking and saying all the crazy things, that it's just kind of discouraging. I mean, even I think as many people who got hyped for the fight on after Toronto, just as many said, I'm good, thanks. I'll keep my $100 after Brooklyn.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's still time to bring it back up. But, yeah, it was just kind of it just kind of left things off in a very weird spot. Where is so with your coverage for Newsday, do you know if you guys are planning on covering the fight in general? Are you covering it as a typical athletic event, more as a kind of a public interest type thing? Is anyone going to the show? Like, what do you guys know how you're covering it yet?
No, I don't know that we've I don't know if we've nailed that down yet. I'm not exactly sure what's going to play with that, but listen, it is Floyd Mayweather and it is Conor McGregor. They are two of the biggest stars in their sports, right? You know, you got to cover it. We can't just, even if we are disgusted over the last week or so, you still can't turn away from it, especially if it even comes close to that over under on pay per view buys.
Yeah,
which is like 4.9 million.
That is it's kind of the thing with a lot of outlets that may not cover boxing. And I think, you know, the traditional sports outlets that cover boxing now are so few and far between than where they used to be, you know, just over mm-hmm. the years, just kind of dwindled and it's kind of gone the way of, you know, horse racing. It just, the way it's covered is just completely different. So it's like when there's an attraction, you're right, you do have to cover it. And because there is a public interest in this. And I think there are people that on both sides that just, they're intrigued to see the spectacle, even if they know that the fight is not going to be any good. And you still have this kind of this loud contingency that seems to think that Conor has a chance, but even though you kind of put all the logic on one side, it appears that he doesn't. There's interest in seeing how it plays out. I don't know. I worry on that, you know, early Sunday morning, East Coast time, when this thing is done, and even going into Monday, I have a feeling it's going to be just like, you know, what happened after Mayweather-Pacquiao, where people are just left disappointed, and you know, and both guys made out with hundreds of millions of dollars, and everyone's happy on their end, but fans are kind of like, eh. And I just wonder where that leaves us at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think if that's the case, I mean, if Conor wins, let's just say if, right? Let's just pretend that's a scenario that could happen, right? If Conor wins, you're not going to have many disappointed people.
No.
And if they are, they're going to be drowned out by everybody going, oh my God, can you believe it? You know, so you won't hear them that loud. McGregor, if Mayweather wins, which as most people expect he will, you'll have people going, yeah, well, that stinks. Well, what do we pay all this money for? You know, it's the same thing with Pacquiao in this sense. Like, you didn't get a lot of action, but if you've watched any Mayweather fight since he became Floyd Money Mayweather in the last 10 years, whatever it is, that's what he does. You know, he's a tactical, defensive counterpuncher. And he's very, 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 very good at all of that. You know, but in terms of exciting fights, that's not him really. You know, so unless, you know, that's what happened, the Pacquiao fight. Mayweather turned into a Mayweather fight. People were so excited and so hyped for this thing. And was it a dud? You know, from expectations and hype, sure, but it was a Mayweather fight. That's exactly what a Mayweather fight looks like. And I don't know what's going to happen in this fight. I mean, it's just shaping up to one of those things where everyone's saying, of course Mayweather's going to kill him. And then people are like, well, then you start thinking about it because you're like, oh, I need something new to write. Oh, McGregor's got a chance. Here's how. You know? And now you're like, is it August 27th yet? Let me know when it's the 27th so we can start talking about Golovkin against Canelo.
Right, right. And that's the shame for a lot of really for the sport in general, is that this really great fight is happening just a few weeks later, and it is getting completely overshadowed by this, by McGregor Mayweather. And you hear a lot of the boxing media is not even bothering covering, you know, the Mayweather stuff because they just don't see it as a real fight, and then they're focused on this other fight. And it's a shame for Golovkin and Canelo to get overshadowed like that. But something that's not getting overshadowed, coming up this Saturday night, the Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum, a haunt that is familiar to many a pro wrestling fan that may listen to this show, and also MMA fans have heard of this facility before. Uniondale, New York, the UFC heading to town, I believe for the first time, correct, in Uniondale?
Yes, they are.
First time on the island, and Newsday has, I'm not just saying this, you guys have brought it strong in terms of coverage for this this event, and releasing a whole lot of features this past week as part of the special project. We'll obviously link it in our show notes, but you know, Mark's been tweeting stuff out about it all week long. And I guess just kind of give us a broad overview of when this project came into play, because there's video elements of it. There's obviously written elements, a lot of where are they now type stuff, kind of where it came into play and how you got started doing it.
Well, it just kind of was one of the things, once they announced the card, I'm like, well, it's UFC Long Island, let's do something crazy. And then everything just sort of kept falling into place because they had another card, another guy, another guy, another guy. I'm like, all right, now we got half a dozen fighters on this card. And then my first thought is like, oh, dang, that's going to be a lot more work for me right now. And then you sit there and you go, well, we're going to go crazy. Let's go crazy. Honestly, when I started this whole thing, I'm like, there's one thing I just want to accomplish, and that's I want to get all nine fighters, active UFC fighters, together for a photo and put that in the paper. That was like the sole goal of the whole thing. I'm like, if I can get that, and then I start thinking, all right, well, let's make it ridiculous. Let's get them in suits, and let's get a quintessential Long Island spot. So we're on the boardwalk at Long Beach, which is, you know, about as Long Island as you can get. You got the beach, the sand, the houses right on top of the boardwalk. And then it was just a matter of finding a time that everybody could do it. And that was actually probably the hardest part. I mean, fortunately, every guy in there was excited about doing it. And it was just a matter of finding the right time. We finally found a morning that worked for everybody. And then, of course, it was pouring rain. And then the rain eventually went away as I sat on the boardwalk screaming.
Well, at least you get Al Aquinto with his shirt off.
Oh, that was the best part of the whole thing. He was voted best dressed that day. But so I'm standing on the boardwalk, and I see somebody come walking up. It's maybe 500-600 feet away, and he's in a suit. And it's this time of day, and I'm like, no one's coming to Long Beach in a suit. You're leaving Long Beach in a suit at this point in the day, right, go to work. And I look out there, and I'm like, that guy's not wearing a shirt. I'm like, that's not a brown shirt. You wouldn't wear a mustard brown colored shirt with that kind of a blue suit. I mean, no one would do that. And then I'm like, that's Al Aquinto. He's shirtless. Oh, this is perfect. It was absolutely perfect. I'm like, well played, Al.
So, so you're there with all these guys. I've had to be with pro athletes on shoots before, and sometimes they can get, testy, but they can get bored very easily. They get distracted. What was it like trying to corral all these guys for a picture and go through that whole rigmarole?
No, they were great. All those guys are great. I mean, they're just a bunch of Long Island guys. And what do you do when you're all together? You make fun of each other. That's pretty much all we did for an hour, hour and a half, is just rip on one another. The best part about it, and this is the funniest thing, is as I'm sitting there and watching all the guys come up, you know, park in the boardwalk, we'll meet here kind of a thing. One of the guys got a call that morning from USADA.
Oh, wow.
So he had to bring the USADA guy with him because he couldn't go to the bathroom before they had to leave to get here. So awesome. There you go. The guy's sitting on the boardwalk with us watching the whole shoot.
Awesome.
Like, this is hilarious.
So you did all the video shoot at the same time then, right?
Yeah, we did all that work together at once, and we were pretty quick. And we're lucky. You know, we were completely lucky that everybody agreed to do it. You know, that's the best part. And then they were all cool when we were there. They're all excited about doing it. And, you know, hey, when's it coming out? Texting me the last couple of weeks. Hey, when are we doing this? I'm like, all right, it's coming out fight week. You know, I'll make sure you guys get it also. You couldn't, you know, to have buy-in like that. It was funny. One of my editors, when he saw the photos, he's like, oh, man, Dana must really love Newsday to make this happen. I'm like, no, the only thing he really did was just sign these guys to deals. The rest of it was us and them, you know, wanting to play along. So.
Yep.
So that was pretty cool.
So the unfortunate thing is Al Aquinto is not fighting on this weekend show, and he's in this really weird spot where he's a, you know, he had that long absence, really, I want to say a really great story, but a great story with a comeback from the knee injury. Obviously, everyone has heard about what he's had to say about how his perception of how the UFC treated him and that whole story behind that. He comes back, big win, and now, you know, this is a card which you'd love to see him, you know, with Weidman headline, you'd love to see him co-main event. And he's kind of in this weird limbo with a promotion where now he's a very, in demand, a fighter that a lot of people are interested in. But unfortunately, he's not there because of still some financial stuff, or he's just waiting for the right call or something like that. It's kind of unfortunate that out of all this, and obviously he's in the picture, that he's not fighting the Saturday night.
Yeah, it would be nice to have him on that card, obviously, especially since, you know, since the Sanchez fight and all his all his work afterwards. It's kind of made him a bit of a fan favorite right now. It's up to him. He probably could if he wanted to. I mean, obviously not now, but, he could probably have been on that card if he wanted to be. But, he's selling houses. He's having a great time. He's living life, that guy. And he comes around and they pay him what he, or if he wants a big check or something, he'll hop on that card and fight again. But I don't, he's not, and speaking to him over the last few months and stuff, he's, everything he says on those interviews, it's kind of where he's at right now. He's like, if I want to fight, I'll fight. And if not, I won't.
Yeah.
All right. Listen, who are we to say somebody should, fight, right? I mean, it's kind of a violent sport, right?
Right.
I don't want to get punched in the head or kicked in the liver or chopped at the knee. I have no interest in any of that. So.
I thought fans and media, I thought we were able to do that, right? Tell these guys to fight no matter what and do better promos after fights and all that stuff. These guys are just robots, right?
I mean, people can say that if they want, but I'm not going to be in that line, man. Listen, in this sport, especially in this sport and even football and stuff, we don't know. No one knows the true story about how they feel after a fight or before leading into a fight. Did you ever hear a fighter say it right before a fight? Yeah, I'm not feeling good today.
Right.
No, you can't, because it's about confidence, and you can't chip away your own confidence, because once you start doing that, everyone else starts doing that, and then it just snowballs down from there. So, I'd never be a guy to sit here and tell someone they should fight or shouldn't fight. To me, it's your call. Do what you want. And I'm happy to report that decision in either direction.
So I'm sitting there on Sunday morning. I'm on my phone and I'm looking at the kind of the layout of some of the profile pieces that you did and everything. Watch the video and then I go back. And so you have all these different faces you can choose on, profile pieces for each. And obviously the where are they now. I want to see if you get this. Who do you think was the first person that I clicked on out of all those names, those faces?
Out of all 16 guys or out of just the...
Out of all of them.
Out of all of them. Well, can I ask this question before I answer it?
Sure.
Did you recognize all 16 faces?
I recognized 12 out of the 16.
Okay. I am going to guess you selected the man with a bandana on his head.
Luke Kumo.
Yeah.
You got it right. You got it right. He is a fascinating guy and someone that for people that don't know, he was a former tough competitor, a guy that made it all the way to the finals against, it was Joe Daddy Stevenson, correct?
Correct.
They fought against. And he was a... not your typical personality when it comes to a fighter. He was just, and I urge people to read the profile, but also to look back on some of the stories about Luke. He has had a lot of struggles. At one point, I mean, I thought he had maybe, I don't know, he had died or just, there was a lot of crazy stories going around about him and his mental health and there was a lot of concerns from the community, and then I was relieved to see this face and him to talk about what he's doing and this new kind of fighting league that he's starting, which doesn't allow strikes to the head, and it's just something a little bit different. And I was really happy to see that he seems to have found a good spot in life.
Yeah, he seems when speaking to him, he was talking about how he had gone to in California. A doctor was treated for brain injury for several months. I didn't get into the extent of what it was or anything like that, but and then he came back and the doctor said, listen, don't get hit in the head anymore. So he started coming up with this idea, and to me it's kind of interesting. Kind of marketed toward maybe not the professional fighter, but more toward kids and teens and things like that, and people who just want a little sort of competition kind of a thing. It's interesting, I think. MMA without head contact and you're in full pads. I mean, I wouldn't let my son compete in MMA, but this could be something of interest.
Yeah.
To some degree, I mean, you'd love to see it take off for the guy. He's had his share of hard times, as have been documented. you know, it'd be great to see the guy pull it off.
Was there any other Where Are They Now features that you were, when you first kind of started out, you're most interested in trying to track them down? And if so, who were they? And were there ones that you were just like, boy, I have no idea where to start with this person?
Well, Luke was definitely one of the guys I wanted to find, which wasn't that hard, really. I mean, it's just simple Google searches. You can find him on social and just reach out. And, you know, you never know if they want to talk or not. That's always, you know, they might be like, listen, no, I'm done. Or, you know, especially if you've had some hard times that have been documented, the last thing you probably want to do is talk to a reporter you don't really know too well, you know? So, but he was cool. He was awesome. He was like, yeah, let's do it. I'm like, great. Thank you. You know, Pete Drago Sell, you see him every now and then. He's around, so I've seen him. But it's nice to see him. You know, he's got a family now, a house, a kid. It's just cool to see them in that situation. We kind of started with the idea of, let's find, you already know their fight careers. You know, let's take it out of the fight zone. Let's see them doing real life stuff and what they're doing now, really, as opposed to just, yeah, I used to fight and here I am. You know what I mean? Jay Haran was great. You know, he happened to be back on. That guy is all over the place. He follows Instagram. He's in L.A. doing stunts for 3 days, and he's in Vegas for a week doing some movie. And then he's in New York and this and that and the other stuff. So to catch up with him actually worked out perfectly. You know, I was going through my phone and I'm like, you've seen all my old contacts, and I text him. I'm like, is this still you, Jay? And he's like, yeah. Well, I'm doing this thing. When are you going to be on the island? I'm actually here tonight and tomorrow. Great. I'll see you tomorrow. Awesome. You know, that worked out perfect. Who was left that I didn't get a chance to reach out to? Never heard back from Phil Baroni. Wanted to see what he's up to.
Oh, that's right.
Most of these guys, you can follow them on Twitter and get a sense of stuff, but you still want to talk to people and just, you know, see where they're at, really.
Yeah.
Mentally, emotionally, you know, that kind of stuff. Casas Philippou would have been great. Although I believe he's a corrections officer now in New York City, so kind of know what he's up to, but weren't able to get in touch with him too well. So that was about it. I don't think there's really anybody else.
Yeah.
It's probably someone I'm forgetting right now off the top of my head, but I mean, we all know what Matt Serra is. If you know, you follow MMA, you know what he's up to.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I would urge everyone to check these out. And again, we'll link them. And Mark's been tweeting them out all week, and you can see the videos and all the features and things like that. This is like a sports writer's dream. In order to be able to do all this from someone that has worked in newspapers before and try to do, you know, kind of bigger these bigger features where there's a lot of different parts and things like that. You guys really turned it out really well and really well done. So I want to say that before we go on to the show itself. So obviously,
appreciate that.
And you're very welcome. So this weekend, obviously this Saturday, UFC's debut in Long Island, very interesting main event. And I think probably the last time we talked, we probably talked about Chris Weidman and his, you know, kind of where he's at in his career. And when we sit here in Tuesday, July 18th, 2017, and we are still at this point where we don't know where Chris Weidman's at in his career, other than really desperately needing a win, going in here against a relatively new middleweight in Kelvin Gastelum, and someone that is, you know, we thought might just be a stop at 185, and you know, he's a guy that's been having some issues trying to cut at welterweight, and still probably has some hopes of getting back there. But he finds himself in an interesting spot against the former champ. And what do you make of Chris Weidman going in this week, having talked to him, and obviously knowing him as well as you do? What's your sense of his mindset going into this Saturday?
I think his mindset's the same as it's always been. Just to get out there and dominate his opponent and get the win. I don't think that's ever going to change. You know, obviously he's had some setbacks, you know, he's what, 3 in a row. And if you look at his fights, like, you know, so the Rockhold fight, yeah. He's not really getting completely dominated in those fights and beaten up too much. You know, in the Rockhold fight, yeah. Why? He made a mistake. He went for that spinning roundhouse, and after that, it was all over at that point. You know, and once it started, it just kind of snowballed from there. The Romero fight, it was even. And what did he do? He shot on the wrong side of his head, right? Caught a knee. You know, you never saw that happen to him before. He usually powered through all that stuff, but... And then the Gegard fight, you know, that's just, who knows what happened that night with all the stuff that went down with that stuff and the commissions and this and that and the other things. You know, did he was he hands down? You know, we've been over that. Everyone's been over that a million times. You know, it's not like he's is he slower than he ever was? I don't think so. Is he? You know, is he not a good fighter anymore? I mean, I don't think that's the case, right? There's been some setbacks. You know, you look at the sport. Who's retired? Who's gone undefeated and retired? Nobody. Right? I mean, maybe you had a 1-0 guy, you know, but who's reached the top of their sport and the pinnacle of their division and stayed there for as long as he did, 3 years as champ? You know, who's done that and then stays undefeated? There's only two people who have a chance right now, and that's Garbrandt and Joanna, right? Yeah. I mean, everyone's going to lose a fight. Yep. So it is what it is. I don't think his mindset's changed. It's just, you know, for him, it's, and this is what he told me, is basically he's just got to put it all together on fight night. You know, he's as fast as he's ever been. I've seen him spar. I've seen him train for and hit pads for the last 7 years. He's as fast as he's ever been, if not faster. He's probably just as determined as he's ever been before, probably even more so since he's got everybody thinking negatively about him. You know, you just got to put together on fight night.
Would you have liked him see him fight someone a little bit further down the stack, like, I don't say ranking-wise, because the rankings are what they are, but someone that may have been, you know, I've heard the argument made about more of a tune-up fight, you know, kind of just to get him kind of course-corrected a little bit instead of going up against these higher-level guys like a Musasi and a Gastelum is obviously very dangerous. Would you have liked the team take maybe a little bit of a step down in competition to kind of get things right, or you think Gastelum's right in the wheelhouse? I mean, I say this with kind of an asterisk, knowing that having heard Weidman do interviews before, he's obviously super competitive and doesn't really want to take a step back, but maybe someone advising him on his career may say, hey, maybe you want to take a little bit further down and get things straight first.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think with any fighter, once you're in that top tier, in that top five, where you know you're a champion and you're a name, you don't ever want to step down. You know, you're in a top, you're a top five guy. You want to stay there. You want to move back up. You know, I know the tune-up fight is a thing, but who really takes those? Right? When was the last time you saw a big star have a tune-up fight? Yeah. You don't. They're big stars. They're not. It's not going to happen. You know, Ronda Rousey. She lost to Holmes. She came back. She fought for the title again. John Jones isn't coming in, you know, okay, he fought OSP, but if I remember correctly, wasn't that a last-minute change?
It was, right? Yep.
Yeah, so, like, the tune-up fight is the thing that we like to talk about, but it doesn't exist in the top-tier guys. So, if he's going to fight down someone lower, he's not going to be the main event. You're not going to be, you know, you're not going to be getting as paid as you want, probably. That, you know, as long the higher you're up there, stay up there as long as you possibly can. Because in this sport, you know, one fight, everything's changed. So stay up there as long as you possibly can and keep your name high. Because let's say you do take a fight against a lesser guy, an unranked guy, a guy ranked 12th, whatever it is, you know. Everyone's going to look at that and say, yeah, who'd you just beat? You beat nobody. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And then you're basically in the same spot you were before the fight, except you can say you won your last fight. So the higher you're up, stay up there as long as you possibly can.
So coming on, look at, you know, the rest of the card. One fight that stands out to me opening up the main show on Fox, Jimmy Rivera against Thomas Almeida. Both guys are regarded as prospects at different stage of their prospectdom, if that's even a word. Almeida, obviously, he got a year ago getting that that main event spot against Cody Garbrandt, two undefeated guys, and pretty close anyway. Garbrandt obviously winning that fight, kind of a young guns fight, and a great spot against a guy in Rivera who's looked impressive in his fights. Obviously, he had the Uriah Faber victory, and has kind of been on the rise. This is as I look over the show, that I mean, obviously the Bermuda Zelkins fight's interesting and so on, but that one stands out to me the most as the one I'm most interested in. Would you agree with that, or are there other fights here that really are sticking out to you?
No, I think that's a solid call right there. I was actually looking at that fight before hopping on here with you. You know, I was curious. I couldn't remember when if Almeida had fought since that loss to Garbrandt. He did fight. He won, you know, second round TKO. But you still, it's like he was the guy, right? Everyone was talking Almeida. One loss, and now you're like, oh yeah, that Thomas Almeida guy. I remember him.
Yep.
You know, he lost the fight. It happens, right? You know, he lost to Garbrandt and became the champ. I think it was a first round knockout too, right?
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah.
I really want to see what Almeida can do still. I mean, I think he's still a stud. You think Rivera, you know, he's definitely a kid coming on. He's got some qualities there, and he's somewhat local, right? He's a Jersey guy. I believe he trains out of Brooklyn now or lives in Brooklyn now, one of the two. So he'll have some local fans there as well. I do think that's actually a very, very, very interesting fight and can shape the 135ers. Going forward for the rest of this year and into early next.
Yeah, you have a lot of other, obviously, guys like John Volante fighting on the main card against Patrick Cummins. And interesting, a Kona main event I never thought I'd see is Dennis Bermudez against Darren Elkins. Elkins coming off that crazy come-from-behind victory that kind of just was one of the highlights of the first half of 2017 in MMA, going against Bermudez, who was really fast rising, kind of got derailed a little bit. And he looks to kind of get back in the mix here at featherweight. Very interesting division now that that McGregor's gone, and we have a new champion, Max Holloway. Lyman Good, for those who remember the old Bellator days, he is he's fighting on the main event of the prelims, the featured fight.
Yeah, he hasn't fought in 2 years, that guy.
Has it been two years?
I was checking him out. I mean, I know he had a fight scheduled. He was supposed to be on the first New York card, 205.
Yes.
But then got scrapped for, you know, it was a positive test of some sort, although I believe he was later cleared. But he wasn't, yeah, it's July 15th, 2015, or July 17th, whatever it was, 2 years since he's last fought. So I'm really curious to see what happens with him.
Yeah.
He's a former champion in Bellator. He's a guy, he's pretty, he's had success. You're looking at him like, this guy could be a stud. And he hasn't fought in 2 years. You kind of want to see what's happening with him.
Yeah, and they put him in a spot, and again, the featured fight of the Fox prelims, I guess you could say. They're on FS1 this time, the whole main card show, or at least the top eight fights are all on Fox. I mean, they're putting him in a featured spot. So whether or not they're trying to showcase Dos Santos against him instead, or if they think there's something there, they don't do these things. There's a reason that they do the cards the way they do, and I think that's pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. They're putting him in that spot. Ryan LaFleur, a guy that's featured in the video, he's fighting as well. Chase Sherman, interesting heavyweight. So there's a couple names. Chris Wade's fight. He's actually opening up the show against Frankie Perez. So up and down the card, there's some interesting guys. Obviously, with UFC doing this huge run of shows. The talent's kind of spread out, but overall, I think for a free show on mainly on Fox, I don't think you really can go wrong. A lot of intrigue in the main card, and I think it's really you can ask for in this stretch of cards.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of sandwiched in between International Fight Week, right, and then the big Cormier Jones. So only X amount of you only can put X amount of guys on the Fox card. You know, they don't typically throw the title fights out there. All respect to DJ, of course. But no, you're right. It's a pretty solid card. Obviously, they loaded it with locals, which is actually something I had spoken to Dana about at the that event in Brooklyn that we spoke about earlier, and we'll try not to speak about again. And he's like, I talked to all those guys, and they're like, Nassau Coliseum is my garden. You know, That's my spot. That's my Mecca. I grew up here. That's our spot. And, the quote that stood out for me is like, this is going to be one of those special nights for the Long Island guys. So they certainly loaded it up for a reason. And it's something that they haven't done in a long time, at least in the States that I can recall.
Yeah.
Brazil fights, they obviously loaded up with Brazilians, but, maybe you get two or three local guys on a main card now, on a full card. You don't get a lot of that anymore. And now it's in Long Island. There's six guys who are from here on there. So it definitely was planned.
So we'll wrap up with this. Obviously UFC returning to New York State for the first time in long time, or making that debut in November, rather, in for UFC 205, that mega show at Madison Square Garden. We've had a lot of shows in the States since then. UFC has been to Albany. Obviously, they've been to Buffalo, and now they go to Long Island. And we had, obviously, Bellator run a show at Madison Square Garden recently. What is your sense of how the sport is doing overall in the state since November? Do you sense, is it kind of picked up some steam, not just obviously on the major levels we can see, but kind of the grassroots approach? Are you seeing any issues? I hear people talk about the commission all the time and some problems there, but is there what's the health of MMA in the state 6-7 months later after that big Madison Square Garden show?
Well, I think the commission, I was at the Bellator weigh-ins, and I thought the commission did a great job of policing any kind of scale tricks from anybody. There was like three or four of them, and they were very adamant there. I think the commission, to some degree, gets a little bit of a bum rap in the sense of it's almost like rural organization in a way. Like, they have rules, but they're not organized as well as other places. And a lot of the media, and I'm certainly part of that, doesn't necessarily know all the rules or all the specific guidelines. And you got to go and look for it. So when you see something happening immediately, you react. Like, what do you mean you can't do that? What's the rule? Like, well, there's a rule in place. You just have to find it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think they get a little bit of a bum rap in that regard. But, MMA is, it's certainly a sport that's coming. They're not shutting down too many gyms out here. I was at a UFC gym that Ty Woodley did an appearance at. A month and a half, whatever it is, the place is packed. So, the fans are there. The sport's pretty solid. There's gyms everywhere, and they're all packed to some degree. Obviously, they just had Glory Kickboxing at the Garden this past weekend at the theater at the Garden. There's a healthy appetite for it here, and there's a reason that they keep coming into this state.
And it'll be interesting to see, obviously, UFC, a rumor to return. I don't think is it confirmed that they're coming back to MSG in November, or is that just kind of a rumor at this point?
There's not a specific date, but Dana definitely said that they're coming here before the end of this year. They're coming back to the Garden.
Yeah.
Everyone seems to think November 4th, that seems to be the date. The old adage is just look at Joe Rogan's his tour date schedule, and when they're going to be where, and he's got a date set for November 3rd on a Friday in the city.
Yep.
So I don't know if November 4th has been officially announced. I don't think it has, but that's pretty much the spot that everyone's talking about.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, we'll see what Big Fight.
It'd be pretty crazy. There's been talk of what GSP on that card, maybe.
Yep.
Who knows? Maybe Connor. I would think they would, depending on obviously what happens in that Mayweather fight, he'd probably get saved for December, I would guess.
Yep. Well, it's going to be interesting to see kind of how they stack that and obviously the rest of the year. And Mayweather, McGregor, and obviously with Weidman coming up, no shortage of news stories and things to talk about. So we thank you for your time, Mark. And before we let you go, obviously give a chance to plug your Twitter. And we talked a lot about the Newsday stuff, but obviously keep plugging away. Tell everyone where they can read everything and enjoy your work, what's been printed already, and what's coming up the rest of the week.
Yeah, just come to newsday.com/MMA. That's all you got to do.
Awesome.
Then click on everything you see. Even some ads. Click on a few ads when you're done.
Exactly.
Keep us going, all right?
Exactly. And you can follow him on Twitter at LaMonica Mark, and obviously we'll include that in my Twitter profile tweets as well. And Mark, thanks so much for returning to Josh Jason's Punch-Out. A lot of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, my pleasure. Anytime, Josh.
All right. Big thanks to Mark LaMonica for spending some time with us. Obviously, you can follow him, LaMonica Mark, on Twitter. And, check out that Newsday stuff. Let him know what stuff you thought was really cool. The Where Are They Now stuff is always fun. There's a lot of that stuff on Fight Pass, which I have not got a chance to watch yet. So much content on every single network and platform and all that stuff. It is, look at my DVR. I have like 11 episodes of Walking Dead. I have Preacher I'm trying to get into, and I'm way behind on that. Catching up on last season of Fargo. Just started a new show, Snowfall. It's tough when you only have like a couple hours a night trying to pick out exactly what you're going to watch. And, of course, all the fights and all that stuff. As I record this, Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series is happening. I completely forgot about that after watching the first show last week and kind of liking it. So hopefully you'll check that out at some point. But it's a lot, man. It is a lot to catch up on. And you guys definitely know that. Plus, there's all these podcasts to listen to. More stuff than ever. Our brains are just going to explode at any time. So let's see. Coming up this weekend, obviously, UFC Long Island. This past week, that Bellator show, which I lamented in my my between rounds, 20-minute segment for those that are RSS subscribers. And if you are, so obviously a subscriber to the website, and you are have the RSS feed in your phone, you're going to get some of those between rounds. I'm not going to even bother posting them on the site because there's going to be quick little 10 to 20-minute little bits here and there from between when I don't have interviews or when I don't do a regular weekly show. So definitely, if you are a subscriber and you don't have an RSS feed, you don't have a podcast app, a Downcast app, something like that, to get all the shows, make sure you do that because you'll catch some of those between rounds, I'm going to call them. And I lamented this Bellator show last week. Why are they having all this stuff? The show, I'll stick by my guns in that I don't think they should do these small little shows. I think less is more. But the one they did turned out to be pretty fun. A lot of finishes, a lot of memorable fights. Obviously, the main event between Derek Campos and Brandon Gertz, that was a lot of fun. It's the third time those guys have fought, which doesn't seem possible. And those guys could fight again. I think a lot of people would be interested in it. And it was just an amazing, fun fight. You can actually watch it on YouTube. At last check, over 100,000 people had watched the fight. And it's been a good year for good fights on free TV. And that's something I think that looking forward ahead when it comes to pay-per-view, and I'm not one of these guys that thinks pay-per-view is dead, as we're about to find out with Mayweather-McGregor. It's going to be far from dead. And I think even with Jones-Cormier, if you can get people interested in a show, they will buy it. And in a fight, they will buy it, no matter what. But what's interesting is that there's so many other good fights on free TV. It just seems to be happening that way. This has been a really bad year for UFC pay-per-views. There's been some fights here or there. Jim Miller's been involved in a couple of them this year for UFC pay-per-views, both against Anthony Pettis. And then earlier this year against Dustin Poirier, those are both great fights. Those are both on pay-per-view. But you kind of look up and down some of the best fights of the year for the first 6 months. The vast majority of them are on free TV. So it's a bad year for pay-per-view, and you just kind of things to think about going ahead as UFC continues to try to serve all these masters with Fight Pass and obviously Fox and FS1. And also with their pay-per-view buying public as well. Something to kind of just think about in the back of your mind as far as where you're seeing the great fights. Is that enough for people? Which I think for a lot of mainstream sports fans it is. But, we'll have to see. I was really interested to see that the Mayweather-McGregor prelims are actually going to be on Big Fox. There's going to be a two-hour block there. I don't know if they did that for Pacquiao Mayweather or not. You guys can tell me if they did. But I thought that was kind of interesting. They obviously, it's boxing, so it's not UFC, so it's a little bit different presentation. But, perhaps they leverage that relationship there to make that happen. And let's see. I think that's about it. We're going to call it good. Obviously, UFC in Long Island coming up. We got this up a couple days early, so enjoy this. Spread the word about the show. And that's about it. Thanks to Mark LaMonica. Thanks all of you for listening, as always. And until next week, this has been Josh Nason's Punch-Out. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.